Our first case for argument is Kang versus Barnhart, Mr. Vang.
Good morning. This case is an unusual case because we are agreeing with the decision of the administrative law judges but disagree with the decisions of the appeal counsel. My client, Ms. King, has a disease called hepatic ulcer disease, and the record indicates that she had this pain started back in 1985, where she first applied for SSI and back in December 1997. The hearing before the administrative law judge was held on March 23, 1999.
Now, the government argues that we have no jurisdiction of this appeal because you didn't object to the magistrate's recommendations. Do you have any comment on that?
Your Honor, our opposition in our brief at the district court level was pretty clear, was very obvious that we disagree with the findings of the appeals counsel, and the same disagreement continues. Simply writing a letter saying that we object to the report and recommendations of the magistrate judge, in our opinion, does not serve anything because our brief is pretty clear that we object and we disagree with that decision.
Well, what about what the magistrate judge told you in the order, that you had 10 days to file an objection, and there was no objection filed within that 10 days?
Well, again, Your Honor, our brief was pretty clear already that we disagree with that decision, the decisions of the appeals counsel.
Let me ask you this. Do you have a case that says that because your brief makes it pretty clear that that should substitute for filing a written objection with the court?
No, I do not have okay. authority on that. But my understanding is, and by looking at the magistrate judge's report and recommendation, the report pretty much summarized the facts was found by the hearing before the administrative law judge, and the recommendation, nothing else. There was no fact findings. Opposition was clear in our brief, and again, by just stating a letter that we object to that report and recommendations, you know, it is my opinion that that does not serve anything else. Let me continue with my argument. The appeal counsel indicated that the administrative law judge's decision was wrong, first because her impairment was not supported by medical evidence. And the appeal counsel indicated that because the administrative law judge did not consider the two state medical experts. And if you look at the record, those two medical experts did not examine the claimant, the plaintiff, but simply looked at the record back in 1998 before the administrative law judge held that hearing and before all the medical records received at that hearing. So the administrative law judge considered, but did not give those two experts great weight. The appeal counsel also stated that my client and her witness was not credible, and our argument would be that the administrative law judge would be in a better position to judge credibility rather than the appeal counsel, which served as an appeal. And for that reason, we believe that the appeal counsel pretty much picked a certain medical evidence and picked certain testimony and then chose that the ALJ decision was not supported by substantial evidence, which we believe it is. And for that reason, we're asking this court to reverse the decision of the district court. And thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Vang. Ms. Pedersen?
morning. My name is Danielle Pedersen, and I'm here this morning on behalf of Joanne Barnhart, the Commissioner of Social Security. As counsel has already discussed, as an initial matter, we would respectfully request that this court find that Ms. Kang waived the right to appeal the district court's order affirming the commissioner's final decision. Although it is counsel's opinion that his failure to object was not important, this court has held otherwise and has repeatedly recognized that a party who fails to object to the magistrate judge's report and recommendation waives his or her right to bring an appeal of that district court order. Ms. Kang did not file objections, as this court has already noted, despite the fact that she was represented by counsel at the district court level, and despite the fact that the magistrate judge explicitly put her on notice in his report and recommendation that her failure to timely object may result in a waiver of her right to appeal. To date, Ms. Kang and her counsel have given this court no explanation for the failure to object, and we therefore respectfully request that this court find that they waive the right to bring this appeal. Even if this court decides to reach the merits of Ms. Kang's case, government is confident that the court will agree that Ms. Kang's arguments are unavailing in this case. As counsel has already briefly noted, this case is somewhat procedurally different than most Social Security cases that come before this court, and that is because it is the decision of the appeals counsel in this case that is the final decision of the commissioner, and not the decision of the ALJ. The appeals counsel in this case, pursuant to its authority under the regulations, took review of Ms. Kang's case on its own motion, vacated the ALJ's decision, and issued its own detailed decision. Therefore, this court's role is to decide whether substantial evidence supports the decision of the appeals counsel, and the ALJ's decision is not subject to judicial review. This case is also somewhat different than many Social Security cases this court has dealt with because the commissioner denied Ms. Kang's claims at step two of the sequential evaluation. Typically, these cases proceed on to later steps such as steps four and five. At step two, as this court is aware, the claimant has the burden of proving that she has a severe medically determinable impairment. And severity, as used at step two, is a term of art. Severe impairment is one, according to the regulations, that significantly affects the individual's ability to perform mental and physical work-related activities. The record in this case supports the appeals counsel's finding that Ms. Kang did not have a severe impairment because she did not document an impairment that significantly limited her ability to work. The most compelling evidence in this case is the objective medical evidence. The records do show that Ms. Kang was diagnosed with peptic ulcer disease, and Ms. Kang relies very heavily on that diagnosis in her brief. However, this court has recognized that the mere diagnosis of an impairment alone does not show that that impairment causes limitations. The records show that Ms. Kang's peptic ulcer disease was very well controlled with medication. Examinations revealed that while she did have some mild epigastric tenderness, she had no other abdominal abnormalities, such as guarding or rebound, rigidity or masses. She denied nausea or vomiting. She denied weight gain or appetite disturbance. Also very compelling is the fact that Ms. Kang sought no treatment whatsoever for her stomach discomfort for a period of 5 months from August 1998 through January of 1999. And also very compelling in this case is the fact that no physician placed any limitations on Ms. Kang's ability to work or perform her daily activities. In fact, Ms. Kang asked her treating physician, Dr. Volker, for a letter stating that she was disabled and could not work or look for work. Dr. Volker declined to provide her with that letter and instead did give her a letter saying she could be off work for 2 weeks just to give her medication time to work. It's also significant to note that Ms. Kang was not working at that time, nor had she ever worked. There's no past relevant work history in the record, and the appeals counsel relied on that as well in their decision. Now, counsel argues that the ALJ was in a better position to judge the credibility of Ms. Kang than the appeals counsel, but he fails to explain to this court why that is. In this case, the credibility factors are very clear in the record. There are inconsistencies in Ms. Kang's statements, both to her doctors and at their hearing. There's evidence that she did not seek treatment. There's evidence that she was having medication was being used and that was controlling her condition very well. There is certainly nothing in the ALJ's decision to suggest that he gave great weight to her appearance or behavior during the hearing. And therefore, the appeals counsel, as fact finder in this case, had the entire record before it, including the objective medical evidence, the ALJ's decision, and the ALJ's hearing, and therefore they were in just as good a position to judge the credibility. And this court has held that the Appeals Council may question and overturn an ALJ's credibility finding where they give reasons for doing so, and the Appeals Council did so here. Therefore, again, because we feel that Ms. Kang waived the right to bring this appeal, we would ask that you find that this court has no jurisdiction, and in the alternative, we would ask the court respectfully to find that the Appeals Council's decision, which was the final decision of the Commissioner, was supported by substantial evidence.
Okay, thank you, Ms.
Thank
Patterson.
You.
Mr. Vang, do you have anything further you want to say?
Well, thank you again. The severe impairment is considered to be whether or not supported by medical evidence, and if not, whether or not the subjective pain would support that. And as I stated earlier, the ALJ did find that under the totalities of all the medical evidence, there was sufficient evidence from the medical record to support that. And also find that her subjective pain, including the witness, and her husband and another witness testified that she cannot perform certain activities at home. And the ALJ did consider all that and find that, yes, she did have a severe impairment. And for that reason, we are, again, asking mm-hmm. that the lower court decision be reversed. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument is Cohen.